Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. A man who has done an outsized job of protecting our country for decades, both in the uniform of the United States Army, indeed one of its most decorated and accomplished special operators, is our first guest. His name is Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin. These days, he is the executive vice president of a marvelous organization, the Family Research Council. And in that capacity and many others, he continues to serve our country, faithfully fulfilling that oath that he swore to protect our constitutional republic against all enemies, foreign and domestic. General Boykin, it's always a delight to have you with us, sir. Welcome back to Securing America.
Thank you, Frank. I'm delighted to be with you.
I've got so much I want to talk with you about. We're going to take two blocks to do it. We won't do justice to your insights into any of these matters, unfortunately, but let's get started with what's weighing on me particularly, and I think on you too, sir. And that is, we have a situation in which the chief, commander-in-chief of the United States military, our president, Joe Biden, is now known to have been deeply compromised by this country's most dangerous enemy ever, namely the Chinese Communist Party. I think in the days to come, we're going to learn more and more and more about the extent of that compromise. But let me just start with the threshold question, sir. Am I right that anyone in the chain of command, south of the commander-in-chief, who had a fraction of the really problematic contacts, ties in various forms, and most especially the track record of receiving payments to his family, but to the big guy himself, from Chinese intelligence services, no less, would be long since removed from any kind of position of responsibility, if not actually serving hard time in federal prison?
Yeah, there is no question in my mind, Frank, that were this anybody other than the commander-in-chief himself, first of all, this individual would not be able to get a security clearance. You can't have these kind of close and continuous ties to a foreign power. Whether they are declared an enemy or not, you have to report close and continuous relationships. So they wouldn't get a clearance. And furthermore, I don't think there's any question there would be an investigation. And I think probably followed by a hearing, at least before a grand jury, as to whether they should be taken to court.
Now, you're speaking as someone who is not only held extremely sensitive positions in the special operations of our military. You've also spent a lot of time in the intelligence community as well and finished up your distinguished career in government, at least to this point, sir, as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. So when you make an assessment like that, I think it's got to be heeded as a serious problem. When you look as a result through that lens, sir, at what I've come to describe as a wrecking operation by President Biden and his administration, pretty much across the board, whether it's foreign policy, particularly it's evident in places like Afghanistan, and now I would argue Ukraine, but also across the board domestically as well. And the fact that there seems to be sort of a connective tissue throughout, and that is one of, if not the most important beneficiary of all of those decisions, harmful as they've been to us, is the Chinese Communist Party. It would certainly raise the question, and I think be a good candidate for an investigation, whether it's being done at the direction of Xi Jinping and his ilk. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think that is a big question. And I think that there's no doubt that a lot of what you see is being driven by the ideology of people like Xi and the Chinese Communist Party. We are talking about the Marxist movement in America right now that is behind so much of this. And people for a long time denied that there was a Marxist movement in America, but you can't deny it anymore because you have overt Marxists operating very freely and very proudly in this nation to include in our Congress. All you have to do is listen to a handful of those members of Congress today who carp about the evils of capitalism and glorify socialism, which is all part of the Marxist movement. And to be very honest with you, what you're seeing happening in our military today, I believe that is driven by these very people who are part of the Marxist movement, who have worked their way into positions of influence, some of which are inside the Congress and others are in the administration.
Yes. In the Pentagon itself, I would argue. And sir, we're going to come back with Trevor Loudon before the program is over, talking more about that macro problem of Marxism in our country and what it's doing to all of our key institutions, arguably. So let me just dwell with you, if I may, on what I think of as kind of a war against the military. And you've spent, as I say, decades of your life in service in our military. You know better than probably anybody the impact that things like the indoctrination of our personnel with this so-called critical race theory, ideological racist program, and the sort of social experimentation in our military, and the purges of conservatives from the military, and these vax mandates are having. Give us just a quick overview, if you would, of what all that translates into in terms of, you know, warfighting readiness, to say nothing of esprit de corps and morale.
Well, you used the key word, and that's readiness. We should never forget that our military really has really only two purposes. One is to be a deterrent to war, and the other is to be able to win those wars. You know, Douglas MacArthur made a statement in the West Point mess hall in 63 as he talked to the cadets there, and he said, your mission, talking about the mission of the Army, your mission remains fixed, determined, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars. That has not changed. So anything that the Congress does or that the Commander-in-Chief does that impacts on our military should be done with a view towards how does this enhance our readiness. Now, you cannot show me, you cannot demonstrate to me how critical race theory contributes to that readiness. In fact, it does just the opposite. It divides. Unity. You know why you're seeing the Ukrainians actually beating the Russians right now? It's not because they have more troops than the Russians or more weapons. It is because they are unified in purpose. And secondly, they have absolute tenacity. You've got to have that to win on the battlefield. And what this critical race theory is doing is dividing these organizations, dividing these units by race. And it is divisive. And that is a recipe for disaster on the battlefield.
Unfortunately, its intent is, as you say, sir, to divide and to subvert. And that's how it advances the Marxist agenda. And when we have to take a short break, sir. When we come back, I want to talk with you a little bit more about why it's so dangerous that the only military we have is being subjected to this, and the extent to which the institution of the military itself is being imperiled as well. That and much more with General William Jerry Boykin right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As evidence continues to mount that President Biden is personally deeply compromised by our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party, everything he is doing to help the CCP demands urgent national security scrutiny. Fortunately, 8 U.S. senators have just added a new item to that list and are calling for corrective action. Last month, the Biden administration announced that it was terminating a Justice Department program called the China Initiative that was successfully exposing and rooting out CCP espionage inside the United States. The pretext for terminating the initiative is that it was, quote, racist, unquote, thanks to the Chinese Communist practice of using PRC national students and naturalized American citizens from China as spies. The senators are right. The CCP is a threat that cannot safely be ignored on such grounds. If anything, the effort to defeat it requires a vastly redoubled effort. This is Frank Gaffney.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. And again, a welcome to our guest, General Jerry Boykin, United States Army retired. General, we were talking before the break about the various measures that are being taken to the great detriment of our military. One of the things that I think you've got such a clear vision about, and it's so important to bring it forward in this context of the war against the military, that it seems aimed at destroying the underlying culture and traditions and even the values of our armed forces. Talk about that, if you would, sir, and what it says about where the country more generally is.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was Obama's second inaugural address, you know, he made very clear that his agenda was going to be driven by the LGBT community. And keep in mind that they went after the military with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was a major issue for the military, because up to that point, the military had been left out of politics. The military had been apolitical, and the military had focused on winning the nation's wars. And now all of a sudden you've thrust them into the political fight, and the and what you saw happen in our military was you saw the military all of a sudden being the way that he was going to change America. I'm going to fundamentally change America, he said. And the military became the centerpiece of that. And here's the reason. If you're going to change this nation, you've got to change the military, because the military is a bedrock of traditional American values, the values that our founding fathers passed down. That's the military. And that is encapsulated in a thing called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It's the legal system within our military. And it's very specific. And what we saw the Obama administration do, and now you're seeing it being perpetuated by the Biden administration, is what they did was they went out and set about to change our military, to change them to be what Obama wanted society as a whole to be in America, which he knew he could not achieve that unless he also changed the military, because people look back and say, what were we at one time? What did we used to be? And you look at the military, and there's your answer, because the military had been out of politics and had focused on winning the nation's wars.
And what we've seen of late, I assume you would agree, is the inevitable knock-on effect of this use of it as an engine of fundamental transformation of our country, whether it's Afghanistan or now Iraq and Iran, and you know, most especially, I guess, Ukraine. We're watching military considerations or military judgments being guided, it seems, almost entirely by political considerations, and very much to the detriment of our national security. Let me ask you specifically, sir, in the time we have remaining, to talk a little bit about Ukraine. How do you see what's happening there? There are people on the right, particularly, who are arguing, look, this is none of our business, not our affair. We have no preference really between Putin on the one hand and the Ukrainians on the other. And therefore, you know, we should sort of just back away from efforts to help the Ukrainians counter what's being done to them by Vladimir Putin's military.
Yeah, listen, I think that this is a war of miscalculations. I think Vladimir Putin has is really miscalculated on so many fronts. First of all, he miscalculated the tenacity and the will and determination of the Ukrainian people. Secondly, he miscalculated the reaction of NATO. Third, he miscalculated the reaction of the European Union and the continent of Europe as a whole. And then finally, he miscalculated his own capabilities embedded within his military. At every turn, he has miscalculated, I think, as a result of that. This is an embarrassment. If he was going to showcase this great military of his, he has done anything but showcase them. In fact, he's shown how weak they really are and how far down they have declined. So I think that the Ukrainians have put up a heck of a fight. I would like to believe that they can win this, but one thing is for sure, they've won the hearts and minds, and Vladimir Putin is gone. When this is over with, he's done. I do not believe that there's any way that he can stay in power.
Let me ask you, sir, because as a practitioner of the art of war, as well as a serious student of it, you know that this is not the only war in which miscalculation has had those kinds of unanticipated and undesirable effects. And there may yet be more miscalculations in the offing. In fact, one of the things I'm very concerned about is that Vladimir Putin may decide, in the face of all of these reverses and perhaps the very existence of his regime, that he's going to take that next step, which he claims is part of his doctrine, namely to escalate in order to de-escalate, to create a decisive new set of facts on the ground with the use of perhaps a tactical nuclear weapon or two. Do you think that might be in the offing? And if so, are we prepared to contend with that eventuality?
You know, I'm very concerned, probably not about what you think. I'm concerned about whether the United States is having serious discussions with our NATO allies as to how we respond if Vladimir Putin was to use either a chemical or a tactical nuclear weapon. Both of which I would see as a red line and would require NATO action. I don't know that we're having those discussions in any kind of serious way, because all you hear under this administration is escalation, escalation. That's escalatory. You know what my view is? Let the Ukrainians decide whether they want those 28 or 29 MiG-19s or MiG-29s. Let them decide. They're fighting this war. They're the ones that have skin in the game. Let them decide. But instead, what we are getting is well, that's escalatory. So what are we afraid of? Are we afraid of an army that for a month has done nothing but fail at every turn? Are we afraid of them? Or are we afraid that this man will use a nuclear weapon? Well, I think that we've got to really contemplate whether we actually believe that he will do that with nations sitting across his border there that also have nuclear weapons. They can make a parking lot out of Moscow. Is he really going to do that? People say he's crazy. He's not crazy. Not crazy. He's desperate, but he's not crazy.
He is. That, I think that's the distinction. He also is, it seems, deadly serious about nuclear war fighting. And this is a subject we're going to get into in greater detail with our next guest, Jeff Nyquist, sir. But it really behooves us, as you say, to be having serious conversations about all of this. I'm not sure we've had them basically since I left the Reagan administration, not because I left, but because ever since we have been sort of living under the illusion that we can safely ignore these nuclear threats and the efforts that are being made. And it's not, unfortunately, just by Vladimir Putin. The Chinese communists have been doing the same. The North Koreans, the Iranians, as you indicated a moment ago, are pursuing nuclear threats to us, to our friends in proximity to them. And I'm afraid we have to take that seriously, and we have to get about the business of deterring it much more credibly than we have to this point. General Jerry Boykin, we have to leave it at that for the moment. I very much value your expertise, your sage counsel, and your extraordinary and fortunately continuing service to our country, sir. It is deeply appreciated by not just me, but I know by tens of millions of Americans around this country. I hope you'll keep it up, sir, and I hope you come back to us again very soon. Next up, Jerry Nyquist on the nuclear and other threats we're facing right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and we're joined by Jeff Nyquist, one of the smartest guys I know, a strategic analyst of considerable renown. He is the author, among other things, of The Origins of the Fourth World War, and he's been doing some very interesting research about the truth behind the argument that Ukraine is either not any of our concern, or if it has been of our concern, we're responsible basically for propelling it into war with Vladimir Putin. Jeff Nyquist, I really appreciate what you do at J.R. Nyquist's blog, among other places, and especially your visits with us. Welcome back to Securing America. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So give us the truth, as you understand it, of what happened back in 2014, for example, when the Maidan revolution took place. Were we responsible for that? And is Russia right to be aggrieved as to how that played out?
We were not responsible for that. You've got this famous tape recording of two American diplomats supposedly talking about who would be the best president or who would be the best leaders for Ukraine. And people don't understand the Euromaidan revolution in 2014 was a leaderless revolution. It happened horizontally. It happened by largely young people, an emerging middle class in Ukraine, and they wanted to be independent from Moscow. They wanted to be away from Russia. At the time, Putin was pushing President Viktor Yanukovych to, he was pressing him to become really join a kind of union, an economic union with Russia. They did not want that. They knew the corruption that came with it. They wanted to be part of Europe. They didn't want to be part of Russia. And so this is when the protests started. Right. They wanted to be part of the free world. They didn't want what came with Russia. And a very interesting thing happened, and it was a very much a spontaneous revolution. And you remember 10 years earlier, there had been the what they call the Orange Revolution, which was over an election fraud, by the way. There was election fraud in 2004, and the Ukrainian people stood up and they said, we're going to have a do-over. And the Ukrainian Supreme Court was compelled to have a do-over. And Viktor Yanukovych, the same president they were dealing with, they unelected him. But he came back in 2010, got elected again, and here it was, they didn't want to be a part of it. And we now know, by the way, that the violence, the real violence, the snipers that showed up in Maidan Square that killed those people were sent there by Vladimir Putin. And that enraged Ukrainians from all over the country. They jammed buses, they jammed trains, they got on cars, they went to Kiev, and the government, you know, it panicked. And what happened was, is that governors fled to Russia, government officials from all over the country, and Viktor Yanukovych, who went to Kharkiv initially, ended up fleeing the country to Russia. And a kind of purge happened. And the Russians lost their grip on that country. And that's what really happened there. And the country, it was a revolution of independence from Moscow. That's what we have to understand about it.
And for Vladimir Putin's part, the reattachment of Ukraine by force, if necessary, to Mother Russia, to a new Russian empire, and a further incremental step towards getting even with the West more generally over specifically what he calls the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century, the fall of the Soviet Union at our instigation, I think substantially, that of Ronald Reagan certainly, has all been part of the, you know, combustible material of this episode, has it not? And to what extent do you assign blame for what has happened, and particularly what is going on now, squarely on Russian dictator Vladimir Putin's shoulders?
Well, there's a false narrative about this whole business of NATO promising not to move east. James Baker in 1990 made the offer, you know, we'll make a promise if you kind of speed this unification of Germany along, we'll make the offer to not move east. Well, the Russians didn't pick up on it. In fact, Gorbachev asked Baker, could the Soviet Union join NATO? You know, I mean, you talk about NATO moving east, and of course, Baker did not answer him because that was not something that was possible. And so... Every time we moved east, the Russians didn't say anything back in those days.
And why we moved east, just, you know, put a fine point on that, if you would, Jeff. It was to protect people who wanted to be part of the free world from the possibility of something very like what's happening today.
You know, a lot of people don't remember the history here. In 1990, before the Warsaw Pact even broke up, when it was in the process of breaking up, Hungary and Poland were already starting to petition NATO to join. How can we become a member of this? And it was right in front of Gorbachev. And Gorbachev didn't object then. He didn't say anything. You know, and if Vladimir Putin, who his excuse for invading this country is the breakup of the Soviet Union was illegal, you know, so what, Mr. Putin, you're the head of the Soviet Union?
Well, he certainly would like to be. That's evident, I think. So, Jeff, as you look at what is happening now in terms of this mass destruction of Ukraine and the West responding to some extent by supplying arms, to be fair, but also primarily, I think it's also fair to say, by using economic warfare techniques against Putin. Are we handling this properly, as you see it, or are we still kind of hanging back because of a perception that, well, that narrative that Ukraine is actually not part of the West, not part of the free world, not something that we should be investing in protecting?
Well, I think we should take Vladimir Putin's words seriously. If Vladimir Putin says the breakup of the Soviet Union was illegal, then he is saying from his point of view that what's going on in Ukraine is a Soviet civil war. And now ask yourself, you were in the Defense Department in 1985, right? If there was a civil war in the Soviet Union then, would we have intervened?
We would have been probably not intervening directly, but I think under Reagan, we would probably have been cheering on those that were seeking to break away from the Soviets.
Yeah, I don't think, see, here's the interesting thing. I don't think Russia or China have the right to trade with us and get economic benefits from being our partners, right? And so we shouldn't give them that benefit when they're crushing a whole people who just simply want to be free.
You've also written about this in a more Manichaean context, maybe I think it's fair to say. Good versus evil is, I think, a leitmotif of some of your analysis of this. Talk a bit about how that is playing out. And again, which side we want to be on.
Oh, yeah, this is very important. Look, this guy, this dictator, I mean, he's got a general who is saying that Kiev is a city that doesn't need to exist, you know? And here this guy, I mean, you talk about Joseph Stalin. He says he's going to purge the scum out of his country. Anybody who's pro-Western, anybody who believes in freedom, he's going to destroy what he calls the Western Fifth Column. I mean, this is terrifying. This is Joseph Stalin time. I'm sorry. This is Joseph Stalin in a modern context. This is very
Joseph Stalin, though, with nuclear weapons. And we've done a program this week about the possibilities of preventing nuclear war with Russia. Give us a quick sense, again, good versus evil here, of the real danger of a nuclear assault from the Soviets, successors in Russia.
You know, you got all these people who think that Vladimir Putin is a Christian or a good guy. I'll just tell you what Stanislav Lunev, a GRU defector, told me when Putin first came into the presidency. And of course, Putin and Lunev were from Leningrad, from St. Petersburg, from the same place.
The GRU being, of course, the military intelligence counterpart to KGB, which Putin was a member of.
Yeah. Lunev worked for the general staff. And I said, you know, who is this guy? He says, I know this guy. He's a communist. And I said, you mean he believes in Marxism-Leninism? He says, yes, he believes in Marxism-Leninism. He believes in the Soviet Union. I know this guy.
Which is important because a lot of people sort of went along with the ideology, but basically were interested in the power, not so much, you know, the proletariat.
And he has even publicly stated, oh, I never burned my party card. He said, I didn't just join the Communist Party because I had to belong to the KGB. I actually like communist ideas. He has publicly said that, you know, if people forget all the things that he said.
I would mark this down as evil if we're going into an analysis of this. And to the extent that he's interested in, again, not simply the conquest of Ukraine, if necessary, through its destruction, Jeff, but we're looking at the possibility that he wants to put together much, if not all of the previous Soviet empire. that is a evil on the march, is it not?
Oh, it's reminiscent of Hitler putting together the German Empire again by pushing his borders out. And of course, in 2017, and you can look this up, it's still on YouTube, Putin gave a speech at this Festival of Youth and Students in 2017, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution in October of 2017, you know, and he said, "We are with you. You are the future." You know, he was giving the opening speech.
As you say, pay attention to what guys like this say. It matters. Thanks, Jeff, for your visit today. Come back to us again next week, if you would, please. There's so much more to talk with you about and so much more updating we need. God bless you, my friend. Next up, we'll talk with Trevor Loudon about the enemies within, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by an old friend and valued colleague, an import from New Zealand, a foreign-born American patriot, a national treasure by my lights. His name is Trevor Loudon. He has been warning for a long time about the dangers we face from the enemy within. And we wanted to talk with him a bit about the fact that the Chinese Communist Party has, among other things, been actively recruiting members of our elite in general, business and academic and cultural, but also political. And among others, have seemingly got their hooks into the Commander-in-Chief of the United States. Trevor Loudon, it's great to have you back with us in Securing America. How big a problem is it if even the President of the United States himself has been compromised by our most mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, thanks very much, Frank. Yes, well, I like to say that the leaders of the three most powerful countries in the world, today, United States, Russia, and China, all have their roots in the communist movement. You know, obviously China is very explicit about that. Joe Biden has been deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. He's appointed several cabinet ministers with similar compromise, several cabinet officers with similar, Chinese backgrounds. And his own personal history, starting back in the 70s, through the groups like the Council for a Livable World, has been working to advance first Soviet, then Russian foreign policy and Iranian foreign policy. And right now he is alienating America's allies, Israel, and to some degree Saudi Arabia, with his insistence on Iran nuclear deal. He doesn't want to buy oil from Russia, but he wants to buy it from Iran and Venezuela, who are both Russian allies. Yeah, I think the reason we're seeing the advance in Ukraine right now and the saber rattling from China, etc., is that China and Russia both see that their friend is in the White House, America is weak, NATO is divided, and this is the time to strike and ultimately change the entire balance of power in the world. That's how serious I think the situation is.
Well, the president has gone to great lengths this week, of course, to try to establish that NATO is unified. I think the Russians and Chinese have figured out that there are fault lines that can be exploited. But let me ask you about one other facet of this. And you've written extensively, including in a magnum opus titled The Enemies Within, about the fact that the Congress of the United States, on both sides of the aisle to some extent, have also been compromised by the Chinese communists. Trevor, that makes oversight and corrective action from that quarter much more unlikely, of course. Talk about the magnitude of that problem.
Well, I say there's about 100 members of the U.S. Congress and about 25 members of the U.S. Senate who are so compromised by the Chinese, the Iranians, even the Cubans and local communist and Islamist elements, that they couldn't pass a background check to drive a school bus in any county in the United States. But they're running every major committee in the Congress, in the Senate, intelligence, homeland security, armed services, are all controlled by people who are deeply compromised by our enemies. And I think we're living in a country that's really being run more out of China than it is out of Washington.
To the extent that that is so, Trevor, and again, you have, from your own experience in New Zealand, insights into what it means when the government effectively falls into line with enemies of that country. What are the implications if we, in fact, have reason to believe that the Chinese seek our destruction, for example, the president may well be required, as a practical matter, to do their bidding? Is that not the kind of national security crisis that could put the country in, well, jeopardy and cries out, as I say, for corrective action of some kind?
Well, look, this is the existential survival of the United States we're talking about here. You know, the Biden administration just gave Afghanistan to China. You know, with all of the minerals and everything that has. Now, China did have an American base on its western flank, and that would have deterred them to some degree from striking out to the Pacific. That problem is now solved. And that's upsetting India, it's upsetting Japan, it's upsetting Taiwan. All of those countries are now vulnerable, as is South Korea and the Philippines, even Australia. Biden basically gave the green light to Russia to advance into Ukraine. And it won't stop with Ukraine. It'll be the Baltic states, it'll be Eastern Europe, and eventually Western Europe. So this is the long anticipated push by America's enemies to diminish, basically make America a second or even third rate power. And so we are living in a world run out of Moscow and Beijing. It couldn't be more serious. And the fact that we have a president in the White House who is completely compromised and a vice president who is also completely compromised is, that I think, the most serious national security crisis America has faced since the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Trevor. And I'm fond of saying that, you know, what we see as kind of a wrecking operation on the part of the Biden team has actually benefited enormously the Chinese communists and arguably the Russians who seek the destruction of this country as a freedom loving, powerful nation, to say nothing of the impediment to the realization of their ambitions more broadly. Trevor, we're going to have to take a quick break here in just a moment, but I think what this argues for, if Congress is not going to provide the requisite oversight and corrective action, would be a special prosecutor, something our colleague Sam Faddis has recommended. Would you agree?
Look, absolutely. We have to be working towards an impeachment of the president. We have to be doing that. That has to be on the table. This is way more serious than anything Nixon did. This is betrayal of the country we're looking at here, the survival of the country. So that would be a great first step, absolutely.
Well, this is a necessary, perhaps not sufficient condition, but we need to get on with it. And again, not just the president, but the senior subordinates that he has put in place that have been compromised as well. Trevor, we have to take a short break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk further about the implications of the larger problem of the enemy within this country, what we need to be doing about that. Talk about that more with Trevor Loudon right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Trevor Loudon, an authority on a whole host of issues, but most especially on the problem of subversion within countries like the United States of America, an open society, freedom-loving, that is exploited shamelessly by enemies of this country to subvert us from within. He's the author of a book entitled The Enemies Within, a film of the same name, and a new film called The Enemies Within the Church. We're going to talk about it in a moment. Before we do that, Trevor, you were interviewed recently, and you talked about how disparate agenda items, whether it's the environmental movement, whether it's the LGBTQ movement, whether it's the labor movement, whether it's the movement to impose vaccine mandates on the rest of us, have all one thing in common. They're part of a Marxist agenda. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, and how it is that there's been such penetration, as well as mobilization of all these entities by enemies of this country.
Well, this is the thing. People look at things like Black Lives Matter, burning cities. They look at the radical LGBTQ movement, which is having a massive impact. They're looking at, you know, the rampant political correctnesses on campuses and in the churches. They're looking at the disasters on foreign policy. They're looking at the environmental movement shutting down our energy resources. And they see all these problems, but they don't understand the common thread. And that is, these are all Marxist-driven movements. See, Marxism has always wanted to bring down America. You know, on the international stage, the Soviet Union and now China have always been trying to undermine this country internationally and internally. But there are also thousands of bona fide Marxist activists all also leading these major social movements. And they are working in tandem with the foreign enemies to bring this country down. We used to have, you know, the House Un-American Activities Committee. We used to have Senate investigative bodies working these organizations, you know, looking at these organizations. We used to have the FBI taking active interest in these organizations. Now we have none of that. And it's like a cancer. What happens to a cancer when it gets no treatment? It metastasizes, and that's Marxism has metastasized right through our society, and it's threatening our internal stability, which is making us vulnerable to international threats.
Let me ask you about one particular facet of all of that, Trevor, and that's something called critical race theory. It got a fresh look this week from senators probing the nominee President Biden has advanced for the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who has in the past expressed rather strong enthusiasm for critical race theory and the 1619 project that stems from it and the like. Is that a Marxist operation, first? And secondly, what did you make of her response to these questions about it?
Well, look, absolutely. Critical race theory comes from people like Derek Bell, who was very involved in the National Association of Black Lawyers, which was set up, in their own words, to support gun-toting black revolutionaries. He is also affiliated with the International Association for Democratic Lawyers, which was a Soviet legal front. Plus, he used to write for Freedom Ways, which was set up by the Communist Party of China and the Communist Party of the Soviet Union to agitate amongst the black American community. The critical race theory is completely Marxist. It is just applying Marxism, Marxist revolutionary principles, to race rather than class. And this associated concept, white privilege, comes from the pro-Chinese communist Ted Allen and Noel Ignatin. So yes, it's a completely Marxist movement.
And its purpose is dividing us and ultimately conquering us. And Ketanji Brown Jackson's claim that she really doesn't know that much about it. Did you find that?
No, I don't. Her whole academic history, her whole legal history is steeped in this stuff. She is a race warrior. She is involved with them. She is part of this movement without a shadow of a doubt. Why else would Biden have nominated her if she wasn't?
Well, especially as I understand it, with the strong support of the Black Lives Matter movement and other radicals, would you say she is disqualified as a candidate for the Supreme Court of the United States?
Her fundamental values are completely opposed to the Constitution that she is would be sworn to uphold. In absolutely no way should be nominated.
This, well, I hope will be from your lips to not just God's ears, but to those of the United States Senate. Trevor Loudon, let me, in the last 2 minutes we have, very quickly ask you about your new film and findings about enemies, Marxists especially, within one of our most important institutions in this country, the church.
Well, it is the most important institution, you know, socially, because, you know, the whole United States Constitution comes out of Christianity, Judeo-Christian values. The Marxist, the very first communist front in America was the Methodist Federation for Social Action. The communists were getting into the churches in the 1920s. Our new movie, Enemies Within the Church, details the roots of this, the modern woke movement, the woke church, which is taking over all of the seminaries, all of the Bible colleges, is pumping out thousands of new pastors every year. This is a Marxist movement. This is, you know, all about critical race theory, social justice, white privilege, ending global warming, welcoming refugees, you know, illegal immigrants from overseas, etc. All of these Marxist talking points are now embedded in the Southern Baptists and major evangelical churches. They dominate these seminaries and Bible colleges. The seminaries and Bible colleges today are where the universities were 10 years ago. Not quite fully Marxist, but well on the way.
And unfortunately, as you say, I think very colorfully metastasizing as well. Trevor, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your time today. I commend to all of you both Enemies Within and Enemies Within the Church. And I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. I hope you feel better equipped to do so and join us in doing so. And for more, that you will check out securingamerica.tv. And then, as I'm very fond of saying, go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.